The views and discussion expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of the hosts of the program. WMKV, Maple Knoll Communities, WLHS, the Lakota Local School District, or staff and management. The information and advice presented are educational in nature and not intended to be taken as specific legal, accounting, or other professional advice. Always consult with your own legal, accounting, or other professional before making any investment. Welcome to Real Life Real Estate Investing, a show to help you gain financial freedom by investing in real estate. Brought to you by the Real Estate Investors Association of Cincinnati and the Ohio Real Estate Investors Association. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing on WMKV, WLHS, and the Maple Knoll Radio Network. And now your host, Vina Jones Cox.
Well, hello. I am not Vina Jones Cox. Scott Ellsworth here, hosting in her absence. She is traveling and I hope enjoying herself. So tonight we are going to talk about things about land trusts and what investors misunderstand, what they're designed for, and what they're really not. So one of the things we have, so let me just real quick give you the instructions if you want to call and ask questions, 877-772-9658, or you can email vinaradio@gmail.com. So I'm proud to introduce, excited to introduce, actually, Randy Hughes. He's better known as Mr. Land Trust. Mr. Land Trust has been investing in single-family homes for 55 years. So he's got a little bit of age on him. But that's wisdom. He controls real estate with trusts. He does not own any property. Randy has found that it is too risky to own real estate in his personal name. He's been an expert witness, testifying in California and Illinois. Those are tough states. We welcome America's number one expert in using trust to hold title to real estate investments. Evening, Randy. How are you? Randy, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay.
Scott?
Yep. I'm sorry. I just couldn't hear you. Yeah. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. It's a beautiful day in Illinois.
It is a beautiful day in Cincinnati. So I guess the Midwest is doing all right.
Yeah.
All right. So let's start. So how did you become Mr. Land Trust? What got you into this niche specifically?
Well, that's a great question. I started learning about land trusts back in the 70s from my mentor, and I was just intrigued by them and how they worked and how they've been around for virtually thousands of years and used way back by the serfs to protect themselves against the pharaohs that would send them off to war and then steal their land when they were gone and sometimes their wives. And they invented these trusts as a mechanism to hold the title in somebody else's name while they were off to war. And then they evolved from there all the way to the United States. And we get most of our laws from England. And so the first land trust in the United States was formed about 130, 140 years ago in the suburbs of Chicago to form and create a suburb. They used the land trust to do that with 130 years ago. So I probably had 10 or 15 properties in my name when I started researching this subject because I woke up one night and thought, well, this is kind of stupid to own property in my name, and anybody can look it up. Anybody can see what the properties are assessed for, what the debt was, at least when I put debt on them initially. And with that information, you could pretty much figure out my net worth and decide whether or not I'm a good candidate for a lawsuit.
Good information.
So I started investigating. Yeah, I started investigating ways to hold title other than in my name. And that's when I discovered the land trust, and so I immediately deeded out of my name into trusts and have used trusts only ever since then.
All right. So in plain English, what is a trust? Is it physical? Is it paper? What exactly is it?
Yeah, Scott, it's just a few pieces of paper. I hope your listeners don't let that intimidate them. It's just paper is all it is. You have what's called a trust agreement, which is a contract between the trustee and the beneficiary. It's their agreement. It's, you know, who does what, who's responsible for what. What's unique about it is that trust agreement is not recorded anywhere on planet Earth. Therefore, nobody knows who the beneficiary is, and therefore they don't know who the man behind the curtain is, if you think about the Wizard of Oz, so to speak. And we don't do this because we're trying to do something illegal, immoral, or fattening. It's just you got to take the attitude if you're going to invest in real estate, because there are a lot of sharks out there swimming in the waters trying to take real estate away from you, because they're hard assets. So they're great targets for contingency fee lawyers. But you got to take the attitude that it's nobody's business what you own or control. And there's nothing wrong or illegal or immoral about that. It's just a good attitude if you want to be a long-term investor and keep what you work so hard to get.
That is good. It's important. I think the anonymity is somewhat important. Actually, it's not somewhat. It's very important. I don't want to be a target like you talked about before. But let's clear up a little confusion. I think a lot of people, when they think of the word trust, they think estate planning, that kind of thing. So how is it different from a trust in the typical estate planning sense that people usually think of?
Yeah, well, the typical trust that people think about in estate planning is a living trust. And that is a trust that is typically revocable, meaning you can change it while you're alive, and it becomes instantly irrevocable upon your death. And an irrevocable trust is a much stronger trust than a revocable trust. So that's a good thing. The only problem with that is people tend to dump a lot of different assets into those living trusts while they're alive. So, for example, they might put their car, their boat, their motorcycle, their coin collection, their stamp collection, their own personal residence, and dump all that into the trust. And a land trust is a type of living trust, but it's exclusive to real estate assets, all real estate, whether it's bare ground, an apartment building, a single-family rental house, a duplex, or a Walgreens. It can be air rights, mineral rights, all things real estate related go into the land trust. And what I teach my students to do is to put each property into its own separate trust. Because if you think about this, a lot of real estate investors have been advised to put their properties into an LLC. And I agree that an LLC does have better asset protection than a basic revocable land trust, but it doesn't have the privacy element. You see, most states publish the owners of LLCs. So if you're going to title your real estate in the name of your LLC, there goes your anonymity again.
Sure.
You know, you're right back to owning it in your own name, so to speak. The other problem with that way of thinking is, let's say you have 10 rental properties, whatever kind they are, and you title them all in one LLC, and there's a lawsuit on one property that has nothing to do with the other 9 properties. There's a lawsuit, you lose. Your adversary wins a judgment against you and against the property. and against the owner of the property. Well, who owns the property? Your LLC. So now they have a judgment against all 10 of your properties,
Sure. Even
though the other 9 weren't involved, just because they're all owned by the same entity. So by separating your assets, and this, Scott, is just a basic tenet of asset protection, whether we're talking stocks, bonds, real estate, cash, whatever the asset is, a basic tenet of asset protection is separation of the assets.
Sure.
I mean, didn't Grandma and Grandpa teach us that you don't put all your eggs in one basket, right?
I got that.
That's because you might drop the basket and then you lose all your eggs.
Yep. Okay, so, Rain, we're going to come back after a short break. We're going to talk more about what they're actually designed to do versus what they're not designed to do. When we come back, I just wanted to point out that Randy is going to be speaking in an all-day class on Zoom on August 8th, how to create and use your first land trust. He's literally giving people a land trust, not the land, just the land trust, and showing them how to put it together. So you get more info at CincinnatiREIA.com. We'll be back right after this. All right, we are back. I'm here with Randy Hughes, Mr. Land Trust. Just as a note, if you want to support WMKV, our radio station who allows us to broadcast, we have a President's Special. They had a fund drive recently, and I'm also president of OREA, and I had provided some tickets. We have 4 pairs left. You just need to donate $297 to WMKV FM. You just scroll down to the bottom of the page, WMKVFM.org, and you'll find it there. So, Randy, let's talk about what they're actually designed to do, and then we're then also going to talk about, like, what are the myths, what land trusts are not meant to do, and then we're going to talk about some practical aspects, uses of it, what do you do if you've got property, that type of thing. So, as we start, walk us through this privacy. How does titling the property in the land trust keep that in the public record? And who needs that kind of privacy? Is it just investors, or just sort of walk us through that?
Well, I think primarily real estate investors, because they are big targets for contingency fee lawyers to sue for any and every reason imaginable. And I don't teach people to use these trusts to take advantage of people or avoid their just responsibilities in life.
All right.
But anybody that has read or studied anything about the law in the United States realizes that it's out of control, and you got to protect yourself against it because it can eat you alive. Now, a lot of investors say, well, you know, why don't I just buy a lot of insurance? My response is, I think you need a lot of insurance. Buy as much as you can afford, but just don't rely on it 100%. Because if you read the policy, which nobody does, you'll see there are a whole lot of exemptions in your policy that won't cover things that happen to you. Some policies don't even cover defense costs, so you could literally go broke just defending yourself in court because that's so expensive to do. So anytime you can avoid the court system, you are helping yourself out and your family. But I'd say, you know, if you sign a note, if you make a commitment, you should follow through or suffer the consequences.
Right.
I'm teaching people to use these trusts to protect themselves against those people that don't want to work hard for a living. They want to sit at home and watch TV all day and then sue you when you get a large estate.
All those bad actors.
So the bad actors. Now, back to your original question. Land trusts by themselves are not big asset protection tools. However, I think the first and easiest and least expensive form of asset protection is to not own real estate in your name. Because if you think about it, if somebody wants to sue you and they go to their lawyer and they say, I want to sue Bill Smith, the first thing the lawyer is going to do is turn to his computer and type Bill Smith in. And if up pops, you know, a whole page of real estate that Bill Smith owns,
right,
the attorney is going to turn to his client and say, well, I think we got a pretty good case here. No matter what, because he knows there are assets to go after. You see, attorneys aren't stupid. They didn't pass the bar exam by being stupid. They don't sue poor people. Poor people can get away with anything, and no one's going to sue them because there's a difference between suing and winning, and winning and collecting. So the lawyer's only going to sue somebody that has hard assets in their name. So your first line of defense is get out of the public record and don't own hard assets in your name. It's called control, not ownership.
Gotcha.
And you get all the same benefits, all the same tax benefits. You get all the same benefits of owning real estate if you control it as if you own it. So why would anybody own this stuff in their name if all there are negatives and no positives? So your first step in asset protection is to get off the deeds if you're on them now. And in the future, if you buy real estate, buy it directly from the seller into your trust. So you are never in the chain of title. And that will serve you well. Now, there are lots of different trusts out there, very sophisticated trusts that give you much more asset protection if you do get sued. I've got a friend that sells these types of trusts, and he charges $45,000 per trust.
Wow.
So that's how sophisticated you can get. But if you're just starting out, especially if you got a few properties in your name or you are going to start buying properties, you know, you can't afford $45,000. So
sure,
let's start with the basics and get you involved in something that will at least get you out of the public record and keep you out of the public record. And then you can go from there. Now, the other thing that I teach is, yes, I like LLCs. I use LLCs in my business every day, but not to own the real estate.
Gotcha.
They should be the beneficiary of the real estate, of the trust. They should be the beneficiary of the trust, because you got to think of it this way. The liability on the property held in the trust flows through to the beneficiary. So it's not that you don't have any more liability, it just flows a different direction.
Sure.
So if it's going to flow through the beneficiary, Scott, we'll put an LLC at the beneficiary level. Nobody knows it's the LLC is there because you can't look up who owns the trust.
Right.
But if it is, if the trust is attacked, then you have the protection of the LLC at the beneficiary level.
So let's talk about the roles. So who is the trustee? Like, so we talked about the benefit, you know, who is the beneficiary or beneficial interest, and how do you separate all that? Because obviously a person, I assume, or a company has to be the trustee.
Well, yes, it's either a professional trustee or a trust company. It could be an individual trustee service or a company like Chicago Title. Chicago Title is a trustee on 65,000 land trusts.
Wow!
In just three states. Now they did just open up Florida a couple months ago, so now they got four states. But they're the biggest trustee in the country. I personally like to use individuals as trustees for a lot of reasons. One is they don't charge me, I don't have to pay those trustee fees. But the trustee can be anybody. There's no test to take, no license to get. Basically, you just have to have a temperature, Scott, so most people do qualify.
Well, but that brings up a question. So what if I just get Uncle Harry, who drinks, and he has no idea how to be a trustee, and somebody says, tell me the beneficiary of the trustee. What, like, how it seems like there is – they do need to have some understanding in what they shouldn't do or what they, you know, I mean, if I'm your trustee and somebody comes to me and says, who's a beneficiary? I'm going to say pound salt. You have to get a warrant if you want that. Is that correct? Or how do you handle it if you just, I mean, you've got these free people doing it, so I get it. But how do you make sure they still act in your best interest?
Well, the trust agreement holds them their feet to the fire. The trust agreement says that they are not allowed to divulge who the beneficiary is without a court order. So you'd have to sue, drag the trustee into court, bend their thumbs back, and say, all right, we got you. Who is the beneficiary? But, you know, we've got some ways of combating that as well in our trust agreement. But that's basically the process. And you do want to be careful who your trustee is. I personally think it should be somebody with a different last name than you. Somebody that lives out of the county in which the property is located.
Okay.
And ideally, maybe somebody who has a financial interest in your well-being. For example, maybe an adult child, an adult daughter that got married and changed her name and lives out of the county and lives, you know, in a whole other state.
Sure.
She might be a great trustee. She has every interest in your success. But I always tell my students, you know, if you can't find somebody to be your trustee, let me know and I'll refer you to a trustee service. I don't provide that myself, but I can refer people to a trustee service.
So we just either want a professional trustee or someone who at least has been educated a little bit on what they can and can't do to protect the structure of that trust.
Right.
So let's talk about too. I've heard it's very easy that using a land trust makes transferring property easier and cheaper. So how does something like that compare to a normal sale of the property?
Well, I think what you're talking about, Scott, is if you sell the trust instead of the property.
Okay.
And what that means is if you, let's say you personally own the beneficial interest in a trust, you could sell the property out of the trust to the new buyer, or you could sell the beneficial interest in the trust to the new buyer. So basically the buyer says, oh, I like this trust idea. I'll just buy the beneficial interest, so I'll step in as beneficiary. Nothing's recorded at the courthouse. Nobody sees this transaction at all. It's all very private. And I'll just step into your shoes, Scott. As opposed to you deeding out of the trust and directly into the buyer's name.
That seems much easier to sell it that way.
Well, there are a lot of benefits to doing that. Really too involved to get into right now, but I will be getting into all that in detail at the class next Saturday, the 8th that you mentioned earlier. Yeah,
everybody needs to to be on that.
Yeah.
All right, so we're going to take a break. Before we leave, remember, 877-772-9658 if you have any questions for Randy or VinaRadio@gmail.com. We'll be back in just a minute. Right. We are back. Just as a reminder, if you'd like to support WMKV, and if you donate $297, you're going to get a pair of tickets for the National Real Estate Summit that happens in November at Great Wolf Lodge here in Cincinnati. Great prices on hotel rooms and everything for that. So I encourage you to donate that $297 so you get a pair of tickets and you're supporting a great organization. And we're here with Randy Hughes, Mr. Land Trust. He's got an all-day event, How to Create and Use Your First Land Trust. That'll be on Zoom August 8th. So no matter where in the country you are, you can partake and you'll get a copy of the recording. So and he's literally giving you a land trust and showing you how to put it together. So go to get more information at CincinnatiRIA.com. Randy, let's talk about – oh, actually, I've got a question. Just got a question from somebody. This is from – I think it's Matt or Matt Vey. If the seller puts their property in a land trust and controls 100% of the beneficial interest, and just prior to that, they send a notice to their lender they are doing it for estate planning purposes, and you, the buyer, asked to get an option to buy the full beneficial interest, appropriately secured, is that a reasonable way to do seller financing and leave the current loan in place?
Well, this caller is on the right track. But seller financing and options are two different things. An option means you have the right to buy it, but you haven't yet. And seller financing means the sale has actually occurred. But they're on the right track as far as what they're talking about. Now, let's back up a minute. If you are selling your, if you're putting your personal residence into a trust, a land trust, there was a law passed back in 1982, I believe it was, called the Garn-St. Germain Act. And it basically said that all Americans have the right to put their properties into a trust, transfer title out of their names into a trust, and not trigger the due on sale clause. And I think that's what the caller is getting at.
I think so, yeah.
Is the possibility of triggering the due on sale. Now, if it's an investment property, it's a different story. And yes, if you put the property into a trust and then sell the beneficial interest in the trust, technically, you are supposed to retain 51% of the beneficial interest to still be protected against the due on sale clause. But I know a lot of investors that go ahead and just sell the beneficial interest because that sale is private. It's not recorded anywhere, so the lender actually doesn't know it ever happened. But oftentimes the lender might find out if they're if there's an escrow and they change insurance policies or something, but we have ways of dealing with that as well. So you have two options here on this subject. One is you tell the lender. Two is you don't tell the lender. My personal experience after speaking all around the United States and in Mexico on this subject for the last 26 years, because I always ask my audiences, you know, have you ever had a due on sale clause called on you? And I think in all those 26 years, I only had one person that said yes. My personal opinion is if you're dealing with the big banks, which I don't like dealing with, you know, like Chase and Bank of America, their right hand doesn't know what their left hand's doing most of the time anyway, and they're just happy to, you know, get the payment, and they got enough problems with people that aren't making mortgage payments. So you keep making your payments, and you're usually okay. Personally, I like to deal with regional banks, the local banks. And I just went to my banks and have talked to them all the time about this subject, and I tell them that I want to hold the title to any of my investments in a trust for a couple of reasons, and privacy is one, and estate planning is another. And every one of my local banks have said, oh, yeah, we understand that. That's fine. And they even put it in writing that it was not triggering the due on sale. So those are your options.
All right, let's talk about some myths out there. People will talk about, so one we already talked about, does a land trust protect assets from lawsuits by itself? No, it doesn't provide legal protection, but you had indicated that you just couple that with an LLC being the beneficial interest, and I think that's a great way. You've talked about giving anonymity with the land trust, and then you have your asset protection besides your insurance, treating your tenants right, things like that, and then the LLC is your final stand to try to keep that. But some people think, I've heard it, like they talk about judgment proof. If you have it in a land trust, you're never going to get a judgment. And so why is that such dangerous thinking? People use a land trust and they think they have that it's judgment proof. What do you talk about that?
Well, yeah, it doesn't make you judgment proof. What it does do is if you put property into a trust and then you go out and do something stupid and you get sued and a judgment is rendered against you, that judgment will not attach to the property in the trust. Why? Because you don't own the property. The trust owns it, and they can only attach that judgment against things you own.
Oh, really?
Which is that's a whole other good reason to not own this stuff in your name, because if something does happen to you and the judgment is rendered against you personally, your properties are going to be protected against that.
Can they get your beneficial interest?
Yes, ultimately, but they're going to have to sue you. You know, it's going to be expensive. You're going to be in court for a couple of years before they get to the point where they can get you on the stand and ask the question. This is assuming they sued you and win. The next step after that in a lawsuit is what's called a citation to discover your assets. Now they get you into court. You're on the stand. You've sworn in. You've sworn to tell the truth. And they ask you questions like, do you own the beneficial interest in the trust? And then you've got to say yes. And then they could go after that beneficial interest. But it does keep the judgment from automatically attaching to the property, which buys you some time to try to work out a resolution to your problems.
And that would be the same thing with the IRS, creditors, bankruptcy, and all that kind of stuff. It's just going to delay that and make it, again, it's going to be hard for somebody to do that. It's going to be expensive for somebody
right.
to do that.
Time-consuming and expensive. But like I said, you know, if it's a justifiable judgment against you, it at least gives you some time to try to come to a resolution with your creditors as opposed to them just cutting your head off with the shoulders and you're done. You know what I mean?
Right. You know, many folks, listeners, know I'm a CPA, so I'm just going to ask this. So a lot of people, they'll come and they'll say, I've got this stuff in a land trust. I don't have to pay any taxes. why do people wrongly assume that? Why do you think that is?
Oh, I think there's a lot of misinformation about trusts in general. I've asked many lawyers, did they learn anything about trusts in law school? And they either said nothing or they said they had maybe 3 hours of trust law. So there's not a lot of information out there unless a lawyer or an individual takes it upon themselves to learn and study it. A lot of misinformation in reference to being judgment proof. You're not judgment proof just because you put it into a trust. And that's why it's important that you learn from somebody that knows what the heck they're talking about.
So tell me something. Is it a set it and forget it tool, or do you have to do some ongoing maintenance? Like typically with a corporation, an LLC, you want to do some maintenance on it. And so is it a set it and forget it tool?
It really is, Scott. I mean, especially if you're a long-term hold type of investor. I mean, you can set these trusts up for, let's say, 30 years, deed the property right into it from day one. And 30 years later, you can renew the trust for another 30 years if you want to.
All right.
There's not much, if any, maintenance on the trust itself as time goes by, unless, of course, if you're putting some financing on it, you would have to, put a mortgage on it, and that's not a big deal. Or if you're selling the property out of the trust, you deed out of the trust, and that's not a big deal, But short of that, if you are buy and hold, you just do it and forget about it.
What do you see as the most common mistakes when people are setting up trusts themselves or with bad advice from the internet? Everybody goes out to YouTube and it's like, yeah, don't do that. So I'm not saying all YouTube information is bad. I'm not saying that. You can be, but you have to know. So what is the common mistakes you see? Some most common.
Well, I think the biggest mistake is to go to the internet. You can get a trust agreement off the internet. It doesn't cost you anything. It's like two pages long. And you basically get what you pay for, Scott, because my trust agreement, for example, that I give to my students is 40 pages. As I said originally, it's a contract, and you can put anything in that contract that's not against public policy or illegal to do. And therefore, the stronger your contract, the more protection you're going to have if you are attacked. And if you got a two-page trust agreement, it's not going to give you any protection.
Are land trusts legal in all 50 states?
They really are. They're not as prevalent in some states as other ones, but there's no state that I'm aware of that has made them illegal. Right. Now, there are only six states that have an actual land trust statute, but all states way back in the 30s in the Full Faith and Credit Act agreed to honor each other's laws. And so what's interesting about that question, Scott, is there's no federal land trust law.
Gotcha.
There's only state by state. And so I live in Illinois. It's the granddaddy of land trust law. The most case law decisions have been made in Illinois because it's been around so long here. And most states, if there is litigation with a trust involved, they'll default to Illinois and say, well, you know, shoot, Illinois made a decision on this same question 30 years ago, so we're just going to take Illinois' decision and apply it.
Super, Randy. We're gonna take one break, one more break before the end of the show, and we'll come back and we'll talk about some practical application. We'll see you back in a minute.
All right.
Are you organizing an event? Want some extra publicity to drive attendance? Consider using WMKV to promote your event. And you can designate when you want your spots to air to promote your event. To learn more about buying inexpensive spots to promote your event on WMKV, call us. 513-782-2427. That's 782-2427.
And taking a small break, 548, down to 80 degrees outside. Quick more look at the traffic. Moderate issue, State Route 4 at Dixie Highway at Sims Road. That one's been there for a while in Fairfield. That accident is still there. 75 northbound at Tylersville Road, exit 22. We have an accident in the left lane in WLHS land. Moderate issue, Wilmington Pike. Northbound at 675, we have an accident there. And moderate issue US 42 at Kentucky 237, Gunpowder Road. We have an accident in Florence.
All right, we are back. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate. I'm Scott Ellsworth, your host, here with Randy Hughes, Mr. Land Trust. Randy's got a class August 8th. It's about 6-7 hours. He's literally going to give people a land trust, showing them how to pull it all together. You're going to get more info. Go to CincinnatiRIA.com, CincinnatiRIA.com. You can sign up for that class. You do not want to miss that. You're going to get some good information, and you're going to be on your way to helping yourself be a little bit more anonymous in what you have asset-wise so the world doesn't see it all. All right, Randy, I just have appreciated this so much. We have about 8 minutes. So we're going to talk through sort of the practical aspects, the application of this. So what is it usually, what does it cost to set one up properly? Like, what should a person budget? Should they, hopefully they're going to, take your class. Do they get your forms? Do they, that type of thing. So what does it typically cost?
Well, yeah, if you learn how to do it yourself, which is what I've done for the last 26 years, I've been using this trust myself in my business for the last 45 years, but teaching it for 26. And if you learn how to do it yourself, it costs you nothing, zero. And you can, you know, if you think about all the properties that you might be involved in over your lifetime, it's a huge, huge savings. For example, give you a couple examples. If you learn to do it yourself, you can set up your own trust on your computer and have a template and basically spit these things out in about 10 minutes by filling out the blanks and making sure it's exactly the way you want it. I have, from time to time, I have some of my people that are in audiences say, well, you know, it's a great idea, Randy, but I don't want to do it myself. Can you refer me to an attorney to do it for me? And I say, yeah, and I refer them to an attorney, and she charges $2,500 per trust.
Wow, that's still a lot.
Now,
not $45,000.
No, but $2,500. You know, if you're very active in this business, maybe you're buying. Even if you buy one or two a year, that sure adds up.
Sure.
Now there are other areas of the country where you can get it done less expensively, maybe for $1,000. But it really behooves you to learn how to do this yourself, not only because it saves you a ton of money, but because you understand it better.
Right.
You learn and you understand it better, and you can improve and maybe make your trust agreement better over time as you learn how to do this. But it's really not hard. And like I said, you don't even record it anywhere. So it just goes in your file. You keep a copy and your trustee keeps a copy. So it's a tremendous savings. I had a guy call me a couple of years ago from Kentucky, and he said, I want to get your home study course and learn how to create land trusts. And I said, okay, what are you going to do with it? He said, well, I'm down here in Kentucky. I got 1,500 oil and gas leases. And I want to, you know, some of them are going to go boom and some of them are going to go bust. So I don't want to put them all in one anything. So I'm going to create 1,500 land trusts and
wow.
put each one in a separate trust.
Wow.
And so that's pretty smart.
Yeah, that is. So let's say that brings up a point. Let's say somebody owns rental property. I'll even put myself. So as much as I like anonymity, I'm probably the worst at anonymity when it comes to looking at records. So if I want to start doing that, I want to take my rental properties and I want to start putting those into a trust, what's the process of that? What does it look like for me to get those properties into a trust? What's the process?
So the process is you first form the trust. Trustee signs it and you, the beneficiary, sign it. And any date thereafter, once the trust is formed, you record a deed from whomever is entitled now to your trust.
Do I tell my lender?
There's no reason to tell your lender.
Okay.
Just keep making your mortgage payments, and you should be okay there.
Okay.
But it really is that simple.
So,
you know, I kind of liken it to building a house. You know, you build the house before you put the furniture inside.
Right.
So you build the trust before you put the property inside.
Okay, I like that. So how does a land trust affect financing, or does it affect it? I mean, can I, I'm going to buy a property from you, and I'm going to buy it in my land trust. Do I have any problem with getting a mortgage, refinance, or anything like that?
Yeah, great question. I get asked that all the time, and it depends on what kind of financing you're getting. If you're getting a loan from a bank that's going to sell the loan to the federal government, they're going to require you to close in your name. You're going to have to take title in your name, and after the dust settles, then you can transfer it out of your name into the trust, but you don't get that that anonymity of never being on the title.
Right.
Now, that's with a conventional loan, you know, a fixed-rate 30-year loan. But you can only get so many of those. Many banks restrict you to 4, for example. And then, so if you're very active, you got one house that you live in and three rental properties, and you want to buy a fourth rental property, you can't get a loan, not a conventional loan. Now you have to go to what I call a regional bank, and they're a lender that will keep the loan in-house. They don't sell it to the federal government, and most of them will let you close directly from the seller into your trust where you're never in the chain of title. Now, you'll have to sign a note and or a mortgage, but those documents go in the banker's file only and are not recorded.
Okay.
So that's the answer on financing.
All right. We have about 60 seconds left. So tell me, tell our audience, what's the one thing you'd want every listener to remember from the conversation we've had tonight?
I've been a landlord for 55 years, and 20 of those years I had two little girls growing up in my house. And the last thing I needed was a tenant that I was evicting to look up my home address and come over and knock on the door and my 7-year-old daughter answer. Privacy is something you need to start thinking about and being more serious about, because the world's getting crazier and the people are getting crazier. And if you're going to be in the property ownership and or property management business, you better start thinking about this stuff to protect yourself and your family.
So the next step for you people to do, anybody who's there, you need to go to CincinnatiRIA.com. You need to sign up for his class. It is very inexpensive. Be well worth the time. Plus, you get the recording. Randy, I have appreciated this time talking with you. It has been very educational for me and a lot for our listeners. So with that, you've been listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing. Thanks for tuning in tonight. Until next time, remember, where others just see property, we see possibility. Keep investing smart.